Hello, I'm Jason. This is episode one of my podcast from pointsandfocus.com, and today I'm going to be talking about geotagging for a bit. I just published an article recently about geotagging, and there was a couple of good responses I got to that in terms of feedback, and I kind of wanted to address them, so here's where I'm going to go with that. Before I go into that, though, I want to say this is a little... What everybody gets, or what I want to get out of geotagging, maybe is it what everybody else wants to get out of geotagging. And so, for instance, for me, geotagging is a want, not a need. And I do want a full track log because I would like to be able to go look and see where I went, not just where I took a picture. Part of that stems from last year when I was in Alaska on a cruise. We cruised through Glacier Bay, and our ship didn't follow the normal cruise ship just straight up to Marjorie Glacier and do the rotation and then leave. We spent all day there, basically, and the captain sailed all over the place in sort of everywhere that we could go. Unfortunately, and of course, now not all of this. I wasn't taking pictures for all of this. So, you know, even if I had geotag images, that wouldn't necessarily give me a course and speed, so to speak, about where the boat went. But it would probably have been a little more useful than what I got, which was trying to look at mountains and figure out what those were based on looking at mountains in a chart. So, like I said, it's a want. If it was a need, I expect that this would be really easy, because if it was a need, there would be very little in the way of a budgetary consideration, and short of buying a $7,000 1DX Mark II to be a, for geotagging, there's not a whole lot in the way of expense in picking up a GPS unit. Canon's GP E2 is $200-$250. If I was shooting Nikon, I could get a roughly compatible or comparable GPS unit for as little as $100 that when push comes to shove, you know, that's not an awful lot of money. Even buying a standalone track logging GPS, you can get those for $100. $250-$300 buys you a really good one. That said, it's not a need. So $250, yeah, I can afford it, but it could also go into something more useful to me, like towards a better lens or towards new gear that I'm actually going to use all the time as opposed to just occasionally. Beyond that, though, any solution I put together or come up with has to be something that I remember to use. And I think this needs to be something that's the case for basically all things anybody does, not just in photography, but it's not really useful to go and put something together and do something and have it be this side thing that you don't do all the time, and then when you need to do it, you forget to do it. Things need to be something that isn't so complicated, or occasionally used things need to be something that it isn't so complicated that you can't, or you forget, or there's this long procedure to set up to get started. That is one of the reasons why I really like the whole, like what Canon did with the 1DX Mark II and included the geotagging or the GPS receiver right in the camera. You don't have to forget it. As long as you have batteries, it will be, you know, in the camera to take pictures. The GPS unit will run. All you have to remember to do is turn it on. And, you know, if you're doing a trip, travel photography or landscape photography or, you know, even wildlife photography or you know, pretty much anything like where you're going somewhere for an extended period of time, to do photography, you can really just turn the GPS on and leave it go and sort of even forget that it's there. Beyond the, you know, that, it does share with the camera integrated systems like the Nikon GP1A or the Canon GPE2. It does share the advantage of it puts the information on the picture right now. There's no having to sync clocks or times or whatever. There's no having to manually add track logs. There's none of that stuff. You hit the shutter release, the GPS information is put in the picture, you're done. It's simple in the field, it's simple in post, and like I said, that's a huge advantage. Unfortunately, the current state of the affairs in photography is the only professional camera that has a built-in GPS unit is the Canon 1DX Mark II, and it's $7,000 or $6,000 or whatever it works out to be. I'm hoping that when Canon announces the 5D Mark IV, sometime in the next couple of months, hopefully, that they will include GPS functionality in it, along with the 7D Mark III, whenever that gets announced. But, you know, that's just me hoping and not necessarily what's going to happen. Taking a step back from in-camera, like I said, is the camera-connected things, and these have most of the advantages of the in-camera systems in that they put the location right in the picture right when you take it, and there's nothing you have to screw around with in post-processing to sync things up and add things. But they do have, in my opinion, some pretty big disadvantages. One of those is that the units generally, at least for me on Canon's side, Canon's unit's relatively expensive, $250 for what it is. Of course, it can be run as a track logger without being hooked up to the camera. So, I mean, that's not that it's entirely useless. The second disadvantage, and it can or can't be, it really depends on your usage, is that it, at least with the Canon unit, you know, if you're using it with a modern camera, it takes up your hot shoe. You can hook it up with a USB cable, but that also has the disadvantage of the cable. There's nothing to lock the cable into the camera or into the GPS unit, and so the cable could get pulled out, and then you suddenly don't have GPS. Now, for a lot of things like landscapes where you're not using fill flash, having it in the hot shoe probably isn't a big deal. I don't really see it as being a big deal. For situations where you're shooting wildlife and you want fill flash, that's probably a bigger situation. It's a bigger situation because then you have to move to the USB port, and the USB port has the potential of being more prone to being disconnected. Beyond that, too, even that the USB port, you have to have the little rubber flaps open, which makes the camera a little less weather resistant. I mean, it's never going to be waterproof with the flaps closed, but it would be a little bit more weather resistant. Nikon actually does have things in that respect ever so slightly better in some ways, in that at least on their professional cameras, their GPS units can be hooked up to the 10-pin connector, and the 10-pin connector screws in, and it doesn't usually have, you know, it's on the front of the camera, it's got its own thick cover, it doesn't usually affect any other port. And then you can plug a hot cable release into the GPS. So that's a slightly better thing, but again, you're still on the whole, you have to remember it, or you have to have it with you. You have to have it set up, hooked up, and running. And while it's not as big of a disadvantage in necessarily as it might seem, it also does mean that your camera's going to be a little bit more cumbersome because of the wires. Stepping down, this is sort of where I've arrived at, which is a track log. And this is easily, possibly the cheapest option that you can go with, because if you have a smartphone, you can get GPS for Cam or a similar track logging program, and they are dirt cheap. I think the pro version, well, the free version of GPS for Cam is free, and the pro version is only like $3 or $4 or something like that. I think that's what I paid. And you just start it and run it, and it runs on your phone and does everything, creates a track log, I should say. Doesn't do everything you need, but creates a track log that you can apply later. The disadvantage, of course, is that now that you're doing this externally, you're not doing this with the, you know, on the pictures as you take them. And that means that you have to be cognizant of time and syncing time and changing, you know, having what the time is on your camera and the offsets and so forth. on the same token, like I said, it's hard to beat free if you've already got the hard, got a smartphone and time. So a lot of this for me comes back down to, like I alluded to at the beginning of this podcast, is how much work I'm spending to do something relative to how much it's costing me to do something relative to how often I need to do this. And for instance, geotagging is something that I don't need to do on a weekly or daily basis. So if it takes me an extra 5 or 10 minutes in Lightroom on those occasions where I do need to geotag or do want to geotag, that's not a really bad trade-off for me if the process that I'm doing is at least robust and reliable within the range that it's capable of, if you will, that I don't lose track points or something because the geotagging software, that kind of thing. But on the other hand, if you're doing this on a more frequent basis, obviously, then you're going to really want to have something that does, it's a smoother workflow that doesn't constantly involve time. And that's sort of the big thought or whatever in terms of the both in problems and in solutions is time. Not so much my time, but the actual storage of time. The entire GPS system uses Universal Coordinated Time, UTC, and that's what's stored in track logs, or at least it's supposed to be stored in track logs, regardless of the software that's recording the track log, so it's always going to be in a consistent time zone. On the other hand, camera makers, the EXIF format that stores the date and time stamps when a camera takes a picture, they really didn't think about the time issue all that much. Modern cameras usually have the ability for you to set a time and a time zone, but when they write the time out into the EXIF format, the time zone goes away. The time zone is really there for you to be able to quickly dial in offsets, as opposed to having a time zone included in the metadata. And nor is there, now if you have a GPS in the camera, when it stores the coordinates for the image, it stores with that the time in UTC that the image was taken. But those fields aren't ever written to unless you're tagging with a GPS. So I guess my point here is that the camera makers assume the timestamps on the camera are going to be, or assumed, I should say, the timestamps in the camera are going to be in local time. And then they didn't include a mechanism for you to be able to tell the camera so that it could tell things down the road what time zone local time was supposed to be. So at least it's not a huge issue in terms of dealing with it, but if you're keeping your camera in local time and you're updating it for the time zones that you're in, then when you go to do your GPS syncing, say in Lightroom, you have to remember to set the offsets for the time zones that you're in, or it doesn't work right. Now, had the camera makers just basically use the ISO standard for dates or date time storage, which includes a time zone offset, a lot of that would even be alleviated, as long as you told the camera what time zone you were in and whether daylight savings time was in effect or not. The camera would automatically be, or the post-processing software would automatically be able to figure that out for you as soon as it went to sync the pictures. That's sort of the only big, in my opinion, hurdle about this, the external thing, is figuring out sort of how you want to handle time zones. And fortunately, if your GPS, if it's a standalone GPS unit, it's always going to be in UTC. and the clock will always be correct. You'll have to set a time zone, but the clock will always be correct. If it's like a smartphone, the clock on the phone doesn't matter at all. It's always going to write out the date time stamp or the time stamp in UTC, because that's what at least the GPX format requires, and I'm pretty sure most other formats require that too. So that's not going to be a huge issue. And then even the camera side of things, I'm not convinced any... I was sort of the opinion when I wrote my article that that was going to be more of an issue than I think it is in practice. In practice, I think as long as you're not changing the time zone two or three times a day on your camera, as long as you have your camera on sort of a baseline time, that you will only be dealing with that one time zone offset when you put the pictures into Lightroom and sync the information to them. The final thing that I wanted to mention is this was an idea that came from a commenter on the article on my blog, Matt O'Brien, that he said what he does. He used to be more concerned about geotagging and whatnot, and what he does now is when he needs GPS coordinates for a picture, he simply just pulls out his iPhone and takes a picture at the same place where he was shooting and then has the GPS coordinates for it. And I never thought about that. That was an idea that completely slipped my even thought process. Of course, part of that is that I want track logs for other reasons, for being able to see where I went and what I did and so on and so forth, even when I'm not taking pictures. But, or at least, you know, if I'm going to record with a standalone GPS, I want track logs. If I'm not recording with a standalone GPS, I'm a little less concerned about that or interested in that. But I never even thought about that. And, you know, he's right. Most smartphones, or almost all smartphones by default, will geotag a picture when you take a picture of it. And then, you know, you can import those into Lightroom with your pictures and just sync the GPS coordinates out to the images that you want to have GPS coordinates along with the picture from your smartphone. That said, I don't ever see me doing it. It's not a bad idea. I mean, I think it's a really clever and effective idea, but not for me. And a large part of not for me comes down to I'm never going to remember to take out my smartphone and take a picture. That one of the things that I kind of recognized over and over and over again with this whole geotagging thing, for me at least, is that I want it as seamless and as thoughtless as I can get. Because, again, I don't do it a lot, and anything I don't do a lot, I'm subject to forget when I need to do it. So there's, if it's some, you know, again, I don't do this an awful lot, so, you know, but if you think about it, you're out, you're shooting, you're worried about composition, you're worried about not getting eaten by that leopard or tiger or, you know, crocodile or whatever, and you're not thinking about, yeah, oh, I got to take out my cell phone and take a picture of this too. You know, you've got a big camera in front of you, you're using that. So, like I said, I think it's a really clever idea. I think it's a really slick idea, actually. You know, if you're not going to be moving around a lot, or you're not traveling, or you're not, you know, like, if you're at one location, I mean, I don't at least need GPS coordinates that are accurate to a foot. You know, they need to be within a couple of dozen hundred meters, maybe even that. But, you know, you go, you take a picture when you set up where you're set up, and then you have GPS information for your stuff, for everything you shoot, essentially from that location or anywhere near that location for pretty much, you know, with, you know, minimal hassle. So it's something I think. Like I said, I think it's a really clever idea, and I think it's something to keep in mind, especially if it's not a, you're not in a, I need to have super, you know, I'm not moving around a lot, so I don't need to have geotagged information that changes or that updates every 5 seconds, you know, or every 50 meters or, you know, whatever. So that's kind of, so I guess to wrap this up, what I've sort of realized or come to the conclusion, what I think is possibly the, well, it's certainly the one of the cheapest, and I'm not going to say it's the best, but it, if it's not something you need to do on a daily basis, cheap can make something that's not so good in practice better, is track logging. And that's sort of where my plan is for the moment. I'm going to be putting this into practice hopefully this fall, going to the Southwest United States to most of the major parks out there. What I intend to do is I have an old iPhone 4 that was my smartphone until I just replaced it a few months ago. And what I'm going to do is run GPS 4Cam Pro on it. I've already done some initial testing, and I'm seeing like 18 to 20 hours of battery life recording GPS points every 50 meters. And I should point out that while my phone is old, I did replace the battery a year or two ago. So this is, the battery numbers are basically from a relatively new battery, not a six-year-old or whatever it is, mostly dead battery. But so my plan basically is, since I can get about 18-ish hours or more, or potentially more, out of the iPhone, I'm going to just run GPS for cam. I'm going to start in the morning, start a track log, and I'm going to throw it in the top of my backpack. And everywhere I go, it'll, you know, just hopefully it'll record all day. It should, you know, if it's at the top of my backpack, it should have a clear view of the sky for whenever I'm, you know, out where there's a view of the sky. And, you know, I'll sync things back up in Lightroom after the fact. And, you know, again, I don't consider this like the end-all, be-all long-term solution. In fact, I kind of think this is a bodged hack that's there because I want to try it and I don't want to spend a lot of money on this. And I will hopefully, if, you know, when I get back, assuming everything, you know, all goes well and whatnot, I will hopefully be talking about how this worked and how much of a pain in the butt it ended up being, and whether or not it was even something I would say worth considering at all. So, with that said, I think I've said all I have to say about geotagging right now. Until next time.